Hype. There we go. Hype.
That was spooky. And on
That's
that
kind of
note,
spooky. And on that note, get hype, fuckers. Let's see what Let's do this. Yes. Welcome to the Avengers Podcast, where we assemble weekly to binge things, all things nerd, old and new. You can find us anywhere at Avengers Podcast. That's A-B-I-N-G-E-R-S Podcast. Avengers, all one word. This can't be right. I wrote down, I thought that Brandon made it way shorter, but I think maybe he did. And okay. So,
I think he did. I think you're right.
But yeah, so social medias, at Avengers Podcast. I already said that part. But I'm just one of your hosts. Keith, how are you doing?
I'm so glad you asked. I'm all right. How are you? You yes. asked me how I am. I never do it back. How are you?
Oh, no, that's okay. No, I was just commiserating. It's just busy. It's busy all around.
Busy all around, man.
But we are here to, spoiler alert ahead. Talk about X-Men 97. We are talking about season 1, episode 5. Remember it.
Remember it, and you must.
I haven't even seen it.
You haven't seen the episode?
Oh, I meant the movie It.
Oh, yes. Chapter 1 or chapter 2? Or the made for TV?
No, I'm not. You think I'm version? Watching? No, I'm not watching any of that. No, that's too spoopy.
Chapter 1 is great, and chapter 2 has great casting, but they try to de-age the children in the second one, and it's very distracting because it's been like 2 years in between the movies shooting, and the kids, they're at the age where they age the most. Unfortunately, they gotcha. Go from age 12 to 14, and it's very noticeable, so they try to de-age them back to 12, and it's also very noticeable, so yeah, hard to watch. But anyways, yes, remember it.
Yes, remember it. The X-Men 97 episode, not It, the movie, any of them, or the book. We're not spoiling that. We are spoiling X-Men 97. Keith?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who needs to go first, so I'm just going to ask you, what did you think of this episode?
This episode was truly a mid-season, like almost a mid-season finale. Slightly longer runtime, big dramatic payoff. It was like nothing I'd ever seen from the original series either, which is my favorite thing about this series. Is yes, it's a revival. Yes, it's a continuation of what was so popular in the 90s, but it's not dwelling and repeating. And this was so fucking good. It was beautiful. And like I said last week, I think they're saving Rogue's episode for later, and I'm sure she'll have more of a bigger play in a future episode too. But this was kind of her first big episode, and Gambit's first big episode as well. So this love story for the ages gets focused on in this episode, and we see the skin to skin relationship she has with Eric, and it's straight out of the comic books. And he's depicted in those flashbacks as having such a Renaissance mutant attitude, where he wants mutants to not only be free of bigotry, but also contribute to Earth's art and culture and enjoy the... I just enjoyed the hell out of this. And unlike the Jubilee episode last week, it didn't play on nostalgia as much as just go deep into what's very brilliant about X-Men, which is hardcore freaking drama and action and comic book references. So I was a big fan. What did you think?
Gotcha.
At you? Oh, here we go. Hot takes.
I got real bored at the beginning.
Yeah.
The first half of it, I was kind of like, oh my gosh. Oh, okay. But I got real not bored by the end. What an absolute punch in the gut. And they got rid of Gambit right when Emmy was starting to like him. And that was real sad.
Gambit think that okay.
Gambit think that not anymore.
Gambit much not think about much no more.
No. I thought that they were going into a direction with this where, I wrote in my notes that this is a trope in movies. Could not think of a single fucking example. So, not a trope. Sorry okay. for that.
What's the trope? What trope?
Where there's a love triangle and they kill someone off so that the choice is made easier for the other person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, would they actually have chosen this person or did they just choose them because they're the only one that's left alive?
I am very glad they didn't do that. That to me would be worse, yeah, than this outcome for some reason.
Yeah. She just loses both people. And so it's gut wrenching. It was really, really, really sad to watch. I need to read to you a tweet from the head writer and show creator, Beau DeMeyer, where he says that his plan was the first DeMeyer.
Oh, okay.
Beau DeMeyer. My plan was the first half of the season is the OG audience's pre-9/11 days, rife with nostalgia and comfort. And then 9/11, like Tulsa and other mass tragedies, turned the world upside down and reminded us of the whole world was unsafe. And I was like, fuck you, man. That's rude.
Yeah. That's really mean. Some harsh words, but I kind of respect it. I'll be honest.
And I think he did just that. Cause like it was up until this point, it was kind of like I understand who this is for. This is for the people who, when they were younger in my day, like they watched the X-Men, but like, it's not completely for me. And now that the ending of this episode has happened, I'm like, I'm invested in this like I was invested in Invincible. I am invested in Invincible because I assume there's going to be another season. And hey, thank you guys for not absolutely jumping on my ass. I said season 3 of Invincible and there's only been 2 seasons. So it's just been a very, very, very fucking long time. That was in an earlier episode.
But season 3 has been greenlit, I think is what I had heard, right? Okay.
Yes. Yes.
No, I think you touched on a really good point about like our generation that our age group that grew up in the 90s and looks back so fondly on like, you know, it was so safe and it was so simple in the 90s and we grew up with such an easy childhood and then 9/11 happened and it was a huge pivot. And there were atrocities and things that happened for generations before us. There were atrocities that happened during the 90s that we were just not privy to. But yeah, things got real, real right when we were in our formative years of adolescence and when things got darker for us just internally, things got darker for the world in our area of the world. So it's kind of kind of heavy. That hits different, that tweet.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he accomplished his goal. So thank you, Beau. That was great. Appreciate you, man. Making me relive the day that I was in 7th grade and watching 9/11 happened on TV at school the last 2 hours of the day, just like okay,
yeah,
not having any clue what was happening.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
but anyway, all right, so would you like some Rotten Tomatoes, some scores, some numbers?
My hope is that they went up, but I could also see them just kind of continuing to slightly deflate a little bit more each week. I want to say that you said that they were, for critics, they were 98 last night?
Yep.
Okay. My guess is that they went, I want to say that they went at least back up to 99 after this episode, if this episode is recorded already.
Okay. Right now, as of before we recorded this, critics stayed the same at 98. Audiences went up 1 to 93. IMDb went down 1/10 of a point overall, but this episode was a 9.8.
What was last episode's IMDb?
I don't remember.
It's okay.
Oh, no, I do. It was a 7.5.
There you go. And now this week's was what again? Sorry, 9.8?
9.8, yeah.
Jeez! There you go. I mean, that's... Yeah. I knew this, like, the second I saw that the rest of the season is not broken up into two halves episodes, I was very happy. I was like, okay, they clearly, they picked the best spot of a season to really throw that kind of thing in if they're going to do it, because you get it over with early, but don't make it the first couple episodes. And now we have a latter half that is probably going to be all drama, all action, all serious. So
all bangers, all mash.
Fingers crossed. I want more bangers than I want mash. Can I say that? Is that PC?
I think so. I want more mash.
You want? Well, I do like mash. Okay. Like mash. Okay. I'm back on board. Equal bangers to mash ratio, please.
Can I have vegetarian bangers?
No.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, they can't be called bang. You shouldn't call them. Call them. I can't think of a thing.
Vangers.
Call them what?
Vangers.
You know what? You had a thing. I didn't have a thing. Good job.
Thank you. All right.
Vangers.
That sounds worse. That sounds like veiny. Bangers.
Flanders. That's all I can think of. All right.
All right. Google users stayed the same at 90%. So there's that. So let's dig into this episode.
I keep interrupting your scene.
No.
I'm so sorry.
No, we go off the rails and we just go off the rails. And sometimes I just have to put the cart back. I can't not finish it.
We're both learning how to be better Brandons, I think.
That's what this is. We're learning.
That's what this is. We're learning.
And then he shows up and he's a part of the episode. And it's like, oh, good. I don't have to be Brandon anymore. And then he's not here. And then it's like, fuck. Damn, I forgot everything.
I have to know things and keep things on the rails. What is your first note for the episode? I know we can't do the chronological order and scene by scene everything, but I have a sequence of, I think, 12 notes and then a character list of characters I noticed and then like a list of quotes that I really liked from the episode. What is your first note?
Okay. My first note, I think we've all realized, is always really fucking stupid. And usually it's just so that I get pen to paper and I'm like, okay, I'm taking notes on this. Sure. So this is my first note. That journalist is like, there's their home. It's right here. You guys want to bomb it? You guys don't want mutants? This is their home. They're here. Attack.
Yeah, what the fuck? Great point. Was the address in the shot, in the frame?
It was pretty much, they said like in the English countryside or something. Like, might as well have been. And then they showed the whole building. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, they're here right now.
Now, at the same time, 97, did they have as much, they had some pretty good satellites. Never mind. No, they could easily find that. Instant.
Yeah. Yeah. If they wanted to, especially if people are like, I don't know, like the government or somebody wanted to, yeah, they could find, like, the stuff we have now is probably what they had in 97 and we're just now getting it. Like,
sure.
They've got Tony Stark level shit now.
Just saying. Funny fact about this journalist, Trish Tilby, in the comic books, is actually one of Beast's girlfriends.
Ooh.
So there's that moment where she makes him blush, and he says, uh-huh. Blue blushes too. And it's adorable. And she absolutely is a girlfriend of his in the comics. But she should not be showing where they live.
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
What is...
I'm sorry.
Your next note. Go right ahead.
You see the same four mutants over and over again in... where's the place that they go? Quadriplegia?
Genosha. You say quadriplegia?
Yep.
Why does that sound familiar?
I don't know.
She just made like a math thing into a place?
I don't think so. For some reason,
equations is what came to mind, but that's not. Yeah. That sounds more like a condition, quadriplegia.
I think maybe it is a condition. For some reason, Genosha in my head starts with a Q.
Paralysis from a spinal cord injury. Quadriplegia is what I just looked up. Never mind. We're moving on.
All right. Yeah, you see the same four over and over again. And one of them's the kid that's also at the end, the green kid.
Leech, yes.
Leech, yeah.
One of the Morlocks, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you're saying that the kids in Genosha, the like extras kind of thing. I think one of them is named Glob Herman.
I think one of them is named Pixie. There's Leech, and then I can't remember what the fourth one is. But yeah, they are all from the comic books. Some introduced after the 90s. Some were far before that. But yeah, I know what you mean. They keep showing those as like representative of like the children of the or the teens
of Genosha.
The youths. Yeah. The one who has no skin is named Glob Herman, by the way. And he is made of biological wax, essentially. And he can set himself on fire and throw parts of himself at people.
That's pretty fucking cool.
It is. It's pretty cool. People gave him a lot of shit in the comic books. People were not fans of his, but he's become a fan favorite, I think.
Yeah. I would love to just be like...
Throw it at
my, sorry, try to throw it at my shoulder.
You froze too.
But no,
so
we see those
notice.
Same War Mutants. Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, I announced it, so you're welcome. I feel like you see them because, and I just put this together, like you don't get their backstories. You don't know very much about them, except for Leech, you get a little bit just because he's been in a previous episode, but you're meant to feel for them. So whenever the end events happen, it's like, oh, shit. That sucks.
We know that he kind of reveres Magneto as a savior to them because the X-Men didn't come save them until Magneto came with the plan to ship them to Genosha where they could be free and be safe, at least prospectively. Yeah.
And then also, Magneto was right. Okay, well, Thanos also had that slogan, so.
there was a lot of like signs and posters and stuff. Magneto was right type of thing. Yeah.
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 This was 97. Thanos was later. So, all right.
The best villains of all time are the ones where you can kind of see where a part of them is coming from.
Yeah.
Which I would say my biggest next note is that even Cyclops could see where they're coming from. Because, does his interview go south quick? And two episodes ago, or three episodes ago, we saw him kind of button heads with Magneto. There, even though they shared a cup of Joe at the end of an episode where you thought they kind of saw eye to eye. Well, they saw real eye to eye, and you see his darkness, Cyclops going dark big time here. And the comics have run so long that every character has a dark arc. Or a dark arc. I don't know how to make that sound more fluid, but Cyclops absolutely does have a dark arc and sees things very much like Magneto does because of the types of things he goes through. And this part is no different. That's why I liked it so much, was just kind of seeing Scott be a bit more mad, I guess, at the world.
Real?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, up until this point, he has been, as Logan calls him, an overgrown Boy Scout. And if there's not a better description of fucking Cyclops than an overgrown Boy Scout or a square, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Perfect description. And then when he snaps, it's like, oh, you do feel feelings.
You do feel all feelings, right. Yeah. I think that was what, in the comics anyways, I think that's what people were clamoring for when it did happen. They were like, oh, shit, we can relate to this now. We see that he's not so two-dimensional. He's got a lot more growth and ideas inside him. And he's kind of been kind of pushed into a understanding of Charles Xavier's ideals. And, they're both... Professor X and Magneto are both idealists, and they can be kind of scary with their ideas at times. But Cyclops didn't always agree with Charles. He just followed him and was always meant to follow him, or you'll get demerits. Follow me, or you'll get a D.
Yeah. He's got a daddy complex, just like most of us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But okay, when Logan is saying that he's an overgrown Boy Scout in that scene prior.
Yeah. Not Madeline Pryor, that was Jean Grey.
That was Jean Grey. Who's trying to figure out what parts were Madeline and what parts are Jean Grey. And like I've never had a clone made of me before, but like
of course.
But this is what kind of where I started to get just a wee bit bored, because I was just like, all right, girl, get over it. And I know that's so harsh to say, because I've never been through that would be traumatic, I'm sure, but like I'm like, all right, you're you, she's her, go, But yeah, she kisses him. She kisses him. That was a whoa.
Not even a little bit was I mad at Jean for kissing him. I was like, look, I was like, oh shit, what's Logan going to do with this? Is he going to blow this out of proportion? But I was just very happy that he was immediately like, oh, this, you know, I'm used to this. And this doesn't mean, you know, you were meant to be with Scott. I'm not going to blow this out of proportion. I'm going to be realistic. And I was impressed by that. I like the line that happened right before the kiss. I think it was, where she says, I forget how many sunrises your eyes have seen, because he does kind of give her some wisdom, because he has several decades on all of them, because he just can't die and he doesn't age. So, yeah, it was a nice moment. And I think the hell was the actual line about being in a rowboat. Hang on a second. Let's try and
he
find
says
it.
Something about drowning in memories is something that I know all too well, but sometimes you got to keep paddling up.
Yep.
Something like that.
Paper somewhere here. Let me check my little notebook.
While you're saying that, in that moment, I have a stupid note. Logan talks like a pirate.
Yeah, a little bit.
And I didn't realize it until this episode, and I'm really sorry if anybody else, it's like from here on out, now whenever he talks, 100% Captain Jack, pirate.
I do agree with you. I do see what you're talking about. I want to say it was keep your head up. Yep. Nope, didn't find it. Never mind. yeah, no, he does talk like a pirate. And I like that he didn't have, like, the biggest problem with the Gene and Logan stories in the live action movies has always been that he is too quick to be like, oh, she's the woman for me. She's the only woman for me. I belong with her and Scott doesn't and blah, blah, blah. And he's too similar to Scott in the movies because they're both pretty boys in my eyes. So the fact that in this cartoon and in the comic books, he's always this gruff, short
pirate.
he's so different from Scott, and it's just nice to see that he kind of knows it, and he knows that Gene and Scott will patch things up because they always have, and it's just a matter of time. I'm glad that this little moment, I wouldn't call it a misstep because that's making it sound like Gene shouldn't have done what she did. Scott has impregnated and married and been with a person that is not Gene for who knows how long. She is welcome to a kiss from Logan, is what I'm saying.
And I think that she almost does that to see, like, is it her Gene who has feelings for Scott? Or if, like, that would, like, awaken something in her, like, to kiss Logan and be like, oh, but this Gene has feelings elsewhere. Yeah. And she's almost, like, testing herself a little bit.
Probably, and because the last time that they've really shared a moment is with that moment where she uses his mind, his mind and his memories to find herself in them and asks, is that really what you feel for me and everything? So she's kind of taken aback. This is probably her first reaction with all these other things going on, is to kiss him and test that moment. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well put. What is her next note?
He's mind cheating on her. First, he really cheated on her. Now he's mind cheating on her, but she's cheating on him too. So I honestly, like, I the drama of it all, I'm just like, get over it. Go on.
That is the part that bothered you, that bored you a little bit, was the soap opera part.
I feel like at first it was like I didn't understand what was happening when they were like kind of connecting, and then it turned out to be Madeline, and then Jean was there like, give us some space or whatever, and it was just like I didn't completely figure out what was happening until probably two or three beats later, but at that point I was like, this is soap opery, very soap opery.
I when watching it the first time, I was watching it next to my wife and I, and as soon as the and we really got to pay attention to the ponytail, because they even change, and I can't remember if we brought this up, they even changed her ponytail in episode 4 after they've revealed the Madeline Pryor character. They put Jean in the opening credits with the ponytail, which is actual Jean. So prior to that, episode 1, 2, and 3, she had her hair down. And then in this scene where the supposed Jean is asking Scott, to describe their baby, to describe Nathan. I immediately said out loud while we were watching the episode, I was like, why would she care? That's not her kid. I was just like, that. Why is she trying to connect with him about a baby that is someone else's? This can't be Gene. And then it like zooms out and Gene's like meeting with him on a regular basis, psychically, or Madeline Pryor is anyways. One thing I will note, which probably wasn't obvious to you because the characters are not super popular yet, but on the council in Genosha, it zooms out and it's Madeline Pryor meeting with Scott, and it zooms back to Madeline at the council, and Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost are the first people to ask her what's going on. They say, oh, are you okay? And she says, oh, sorry, my mind wandered. And Emma Frost specifically says, mind wandering indeed, because she is also a telepath, a very strong telepath. And she later ends up in the comic books with Scott. And they actually run different divisions of the Xavier's school, and she becomes a headmaster of the schools. And they kind of bring the opposite sides out of each other. She shows him how to be a bit of a bad boy, and he shows her how to be a hero. So it is a relationship that comes much later. But he's got a thing for telepaths, I guess. He just can't shake that. That's his type.
That's his kink. Yeah.
Although, to be honest with you, in a world where there's many telepaths and one of your biggest loves has that connection with you, it makes sense, because I feel like they'd have these dates that no one else could. And then it's like, oh, well, this other telepath likes me now and Gene's gone or whatever. So, you know, why wouldn't I go with that same kind of relationship that, you know, people who don't have telepathy couldn't ever provide, type of thing. Yeah, it's a weird world that they live in. But I like that note that Emma Frost was kind of fucking with her.
I saw her smirk and I was like, I feel like she knows. Yeah, I do. I think that's his kink. And I think he would walk into the bedroom and say, can you tell what I'm kinking? That's where you put in the dumps. Sorry.
I like the little bit. If you don't watch the YouTube channel, you'll miss all the little things that Emmy does when she's but up bumps her own statements. And it's you really should see it. It's something. But no, I think
when
you're
I pat myself on the back, yes. Yep.
Can you tell what I'm kinking? That was good. I like that.
Thank you.
Do you know those two characters from the live action movies, the Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost characters? Did you recognize
Sebastian
them at all?
Shaw? I feel like I can see his face, but is he the one that has the lasers that come out of him? Not his eyes. They're like circle lasers that like.
I don't know what movie that might be from.
I think that's from First Class, honestly.
You're not wrong with that. He is featured in First Class. He's played by Kevin Bacon. So is that the character?
Definitely
that has
not. Definitely not. No. Nope.
And nope, January Jones plays Emma Frost in that same movie.
Oh, that's in that movie?
Yeah.
I thought she was in one of the earlier Hellfire ones. Club.
She's been in other ones before. Like, I think she has a very small featured moment in Wolverine Origins.
Okay.
Yeah, they're it's all over the place. It's they bop around a lot.
Well, and they changed her a little bit because she turn to diamond at some point. We've talked about this. Yeah, and like that's not really okay.
It's one of her abilities, but it's like she's diamond everywhere, and therefore it shouldn't be breakable. And therefore, like in the X-Men, I was talking with Sprocket about this actually. I think it was over Facebook, we're saying how it doesn't make any sense that she can be crushed by like a brass bed frame when Magneto tries to strangle her, and she's made of diamonds. It's like you can't do that. If you're made of diamonds, then you shouldn't be you should be invulnerable pretty much. But whatever.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
What's your next note? I feel like mine are much longer, and I can always bounce off yours better.
I can't touch you, Remy. That's my. No, I'm sorry. I did skip one. My bad. Gambit is cuter without the hood. Emmy still didn't like his eyes, though.
Oh, fair. Do you like him in his white tuxedo?
That was cute. That was cute. That was a cute moment. I liked his ponytail.
Oh, yeah. Her explaining to him Like, she's wearing, like, her gala gown thing, and he's wearing his white tuxedo, and she's explaining to him why they you know, how touch really does mean a lot more to her than she ever imagined. I was sitting there kind of in disbelief going, like, really? Does it? And then Katie, my wife, turned to me and said, but you'd go crazy. People would go crazy if they couldn't touch someone. And I was like, damn, you sticking up for the X-Men? That's awesome. That's cool to see. And she was like, don't get used to this. She was like, she made a good point. And to kind of stick up for Rogue in that moment, like the fact that she goes into her backstory with Magneto and his magnetism has this electrical field in the comic books, that is what happens. They are able to touch somehow. But touch isn't everything, as Gambit does tell her. But yeah, him throwing the cards into the fire and her like kind of pleading with him, and he says, we just gonna be friends.
Yeah. And he kisses her hand, which is sweet. Like, it's like, I'm not, like, yeah, it hurts him, but he's like, I'm not mad at you.
Yeah.
Specifically for this.
Yeah. And they never really did put a label on their relationship. She always would keep him at a distance because of her powers. So they would just always flirt like crazy, and that's about it. So it's not as though he feels some kind of, he's not being that typical douchebag thing where he like has some kind of ownership or he thinks he's, but you know, very possessive kind of thing. And it's kind of nice that he's just like, you know, I'll bow out. I'm not happy about it, but
I don't want to say gentlemanly because I feel like that's antiquated, but I mean, he's just, well, you know what? He's got that Southern drawl and he does seem a little bit antiquated. So we'll go with that.
He's the swamp rat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To your point about, because I'm very much like, don't fucking touch me. I don't like, like when we do the five love languages or whatever, I'm 0% physical touch. Like, do not touch me.
Fair enough.
But I live with two cats. So I live alone. I don't like usually put myself out there for like hugs or anything like that. There was one time that I had, there was like something on my back or something. It might have been a kick me sign now that I'm thinking about it. And one of my teacher friends went to remove it. And I thought she was going to scratch my back. And I was like, oh my gosh, that feels so nice. And she was like, oh, it's a kick me sign. I was like, can you scratch right where it was though? Like, that just feels so good.
Again, Emmy, I'm not joking. We should write a movie about your life as a teacher. That is a hilarious scene. Nope, there's actually just a kick me sign on you. This is not any kind of affectionate touch at all. It's just, we're just going to take this sign off your back. But yeah, honestly, sure, I can scratch there. Sure. Yeah, I'll do
this. Honestly blushing right now because it sounds like I'm such a lonely person. I was like, somebody taking a kick me sign off my back was like, that was great. That was a great day. But no, I truly don't like being touched usually, but like just.
But imagine this. If you had Rogue's powers, if you had her powers, you couldn't even pet your cats. Fingers to fur, how sad would that be? Yeah.
Oh.
That's one of the highlights of my day. I have three cats. How sad would it be if I couldn't even, I was petting 1 minute before we started recording. It was so nice. They love it. And I couldn't do it.
Oh, it'd be so and giving sad. Kisses, little kid kisses.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, so she would go fucking crazy, and she has every right to gravitate towards such magnetism. Even though he's slimy, I do like that the flashbacks we got of his kind of story and her telling what it was like to be with him early on in her relationship, because she was part of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. That was a common a true thing in the comics, anyways. The fact that she kind of painted him as like a tortured soul as well, like he's, you know, he's having these angry dreams, and he wants so badly for everything to work out for mutants to kind of take over and stuff. It's an interesting way to paint him, because then he does kind of sacrifice himself. You see him care about Leech and the Morlocks, and I loved his line in that big action sequence we got at the end. He essentially says, hang on a second. He says, I will draw its fire away from the gardens. Rogue clears a path for Gambit to the Morlocks. Save as many as you can. We shall not live our days wondering if we could have saved more. I thought that was very. He wants to be. He wants to save as many mutants as he can. He doesn't care much about humans, but he really cares about these mutants, and it doesn't matter if they're big, small, powerful. You know, he just wants them all to be okay.
Yeah,
it's nice. Yeah,
it is nice. I mean, yeah, yeah, I agree. When he does say that, though, he says, "I'll draw the fire to the gardens immediately after." It's like it didn't work. You're not doing your job, bro. Like, we're a team.
Yeah, he got fucked up real quick.
Yeah,
but he was Omega level, so they were targeting him more than anyone. The Godzilla Sentinels. True. Yeah,
that's true. And okay, going back to where we were with his kind of origins and him and Rogue's little relationship origins. And I recognize this from the comics, and I'm obviously not like a huge comics person, but we got Savage Land. We got basically straight ripped out of the comics.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And I only know that name because of you, Keith, just FYI.
Yeah, and her like tankini or whatever you want to call it, her like Savage Land outfit. She's in it for most of the scenes. I found it weird that he's painting her with his magnetism, and she was posed there with like a glove in her mouth. But the painting didn't have the glove part. It was confusing. But yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, I got it. Okay. Sometimes, and before I started this episode, I was like, there was an episode where I was like, it's going too fast. It just feels like it's going too fast. But I like that because that's who I am. Like, go, go, go. If you don't, I'm going to get bored. Like, the beginning
you're
covering
of this episode, a lot. Yeah.
Yes. Before this episode, I was like, sometimes it feels like it's going in 1.5 speed. And y'all know that's how I listen to my podcast. That's how I watch videos on YouTube. Sometimes I watch Netflix like that when you can. Like, I love me some sped through shit.
Yeah.
This, trying to take notes and watch it at the same time, I wish I could slow it down.
Yeah.
Because I'm pausing so often that it's ridiculous. But then I'm like, I don't want to pause it. So I completely missed him. I saw him painting, but I didn't see him, what he was painting or what he was, it's gone. I didn't see it.
I feel like there was an earlier scene where he was painting as well, and she was describing him as like he wanted to create art, create music. He wanted mutants to be able to do that and have a safe place to do that. He was like, that's why I call him like a Renaissance, like mutant idealist. But yeah, and then there's a later scene where she's just sitting on the couch in front of getting painted like one of his French girls. Which is interesting. But did you see, there was one part that you'd have to be paying close attention to see. I'm sure, I want to say you might have seen it, but it was right before the big attack. There was a starry night sky, and there was something in the clouds or in the stars of that sky.
I didn't catch it, but Smash John called it out on the Discord.
Ah!
And so yes! I just go back and look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the Watcher, and he only watches before big shit happens. So, or at least he seems to only be, visible to us audience members, anyways.
During the big shit, if I was watching something, I would be like, hey, you know what? Fast forward to the big shit.
yeah.
None of this little shit.
He's got the universe on like ultimate picture in picture from those who might have had that display on their television. Back when it was popular.
Oh my god,
like it was so fun to switch easily from like, oh shit, something's happening in the big game or something. It's like you're watching Lost or something otherwise. It's like, oh shit, Jack just got punched by Sawyer. I gotta switch back. Fuck the game.
Spoiler alert, man.
Sorry. Sawyer also punches Jack. Did I say that already? Wait.
No, you said Jack. You said it.
I said it twice. Sawyer punches Jack, and then also Jack is punched by Sawyer. So,
okay.
Happens a lot.
Oh, yeah. But no, you just unlocked something. I don't think picture in picture has been brought up in my memory in forever. And I don't, I come from a divorced household. I know it doesn't seem like that, but so I had a lot of different houses that I mean, my mom's house, my dad's house, eventually my stepdad's house until we got into like our house together with my mom and my stepdad, but. And my grandma, excuse me, mamma.
You're a abuela.
Well, she was mamma because we Southern.
Oh, fair. And white.
But I don't remember who it was that ended up with picture in picture, but it was one house, and it was, I would just sit there and fucking play with it. I don't remember watching any of it, but I would just fuck around with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a blast. I used it as an excuse. If my dad wanted to watch sports, I'd be like, well, you can have it on your little screen. We got this movie on here that we could be watching instead. Shawshank Redemption, it's only on once a week. So we got to watch it tonight, Dad.
And I think you mean Schindler's List.
Yeah, Schindler's Redemption. Yeah. Okay. What did you think of Nightcrawler? That's what I wanted to ask next.
Oh, I see. I like him a lot in the live action, which I don't think we see him a lot in live action, but I remember him from live action. So that means in my head, I liked him.
He is incredibly well featured in like the first 5 minutes of the second X-Men movie, and then slightly less featured, but he is in I think it's Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse, where Oscar Isaac plays the big bad.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's like the two live action versions of him that have been good. They've been really good.
I remember vividly X2. I remember it vividly.
Oh yeah, so good. The attack on the president at the beginning was like the cold open of that movie, and he was mind controlled and attacked the president and was basically taking on Secret Service guys left, right, and center. It was so fucking cool.
Yeah. My best friend in middle school was obsessed with those movies.
They're fun. They're fun. And he would, as they say in the comics, BAMF around. BAMF is the word that they would use, the onomatopoeia in the comic books. And he would just BAMF, BAMF, BAMF all over the damn room. And in this few minutes that we get to see him, he's teleporting 2 inches away from his last teleportation just to like shake someone's hand and stuff. Like he's using it constantly, because why wouldn't you? Like it's just such a fun power. Yeah.
Was that what you were going to say whenever I interrupted to say that my best friend in middle school was obsessed with these movies?
Well, your best friend in middle school was right to be obsessed with them.
Okay. Well, you were in the middle of like saying, and the BAMF, is that
where you were going? I'm just an interrupting fool.
No, I interrupted you.
Oh!
Damn it,
we're both too nice.
We are. No, you are. I'm sorry.
No, you are. No, you! No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I don't remember. I was trying to give you the space to say what you were going to say. But
he's one of my favorite characters. I've always loved drawing Nightcrawler. I've always loved his character in general. He's awesome. And most people love him, I think, is the thing. So
I do.
Probably nothing new, but yeah.
I do like him. I like him a lot. Yeah, I remember watching that movie constantly with my friend in middle school. Damn, I thought the medication was really kicking in.
You're going to find the right balance one day. Don't worry.
One day.
Don't lose hope. His character also in the comics is very canonically religious, very Catholic, very German. So when I hear a German religious version of Nightcrawler, I'm always most happy because there have been versions of him in cartoons that they just make him like a teenage kind of dork from America. And it's like, oh, okay.
We have enough of those.
That's not his character at all. So why were you doing that? But he has an amazing line in this episode that he says, "Love is best measured in what we forgive." And I really liked that, and it really speaks to, like, I've been married a little bit over a year, and I think that that's probably the most beautiful way to put it, is there's these things that you can, it's how you come together after difficult times. It's how you come together after disagreements and stuff like that, and you forgive each other, and you think about your life without them, and it's like, that's crazy to you know. It's just, you could get over yourself so quickly by just thinking about, you know, am I not being forgiving enough? And then you do it, and you think for 2 seconds, and it's like, if the love's not true, then it doesn't take those 2 seconds, it takes forever. But if the love is real, I think that you could easily forgive somebody for whatever. It's a really cool way to put it, I think.
That's beautiful. Those thoughts are beautiful.
Thanks.
That was amazing.
I've never heard that way, and maybe I don't look up enough quotes about love, but I had never heard that before. So another pro in the writing category for this series. It's just good shit.
Yeah.
What's your next note? Hit me.
This is a big one. This is not a stupid note. This is
there. None of them are stupid. No wrong answers.
Okay, there's no wrong answers, but some of them are stupid.
What is it?
This is my favorite line of the episode, and I was at a point where I was like, I can't keep pausing. I have to just write notes and hope that I catch as much as I can. And so I was like writing and like eyes glued to the screen, and so I paraphrased it as best as I could.
Okay.
Favorite line of the whole episode, and when I heard this line, I was like, God damn. Sorry, Pam. I was like, my mom makes fun of me. Not fun of me, but like she'll like say stuff like, you haven't outgrown that yet? Like, it's like, this is all kid shit. And it's not. It's so not. And I think that there's so many movies where I could prove that point. But this line, I was like, this is not kid shit. Most nations don't choose a terrorist as a leader, but so many nations allow their leaders to act like terrorists. And yes. I was like, holy fucking shit. That line right there, that was fabulous. That was once again the animated bringing in the real life shit, and it was hands down good writing. Applause all around.
Magneto says that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
he's got some award-winning fucking lines in this season. Like, he's getting a bulk of the good lines, I think.
Yeah, I agree, because who is it, Dr. Cooper? Dr.
Yes, I think it's Cooper. Yeah,
Cooper. Says most nations don't choose a terrorist as a leader, and I thought Magneto was gonna come up with some like snippy alleged terrorist, or like I was found not guilty, or like something like that. And then he comes out with the banger of like, but so many allow their leaders to act like terrorists. I was like,
yeah,
fuck yeah, Magneto, that was good. That was solid right there. So yeah,
he had a good line at the beginning too that I'm trying to remember the exact. I didn't write this one down, but him, Gambit, and Rogue are just flying in the Blackbird, and he says, Gambit's grumbling about something, and Magneto's just like, keep in mind, Gambit, that anything comes to damage the Blackbird, you are the only one who will be where gravity will matter, or something like that, or gravity will be a concern. And I was like, damn, telling the motherfucker he can't fly, that's a fun way to say that. That was funny.
Which I think comes to I don't know.
Yeah.
To another full
separation for them.
A separation, and not only, but like it comes full circle in the episode, because then they're dancing and flying, and Gambit can't do that. Like they can't
do that.
Show that.
He's like, strength. Not only can I not touch you, Sherry, but I cannot fly.
I cannot fly. Gambit, yeah. Gambit, no fly.
Gambit, no fly.
He was growing on me. He was growing on me.
He's a favorite. Honestly, he's a favorite for a reason. He's a gentle soul. He's the type that you would expect at first glance to have like this machismo kind of shitty attitude about stuff. But he's just such a nice dude. And he's just a sweetheart. He's not a player. He's not a womanizer. He might have been before he met Rogue, but she took his breath away. She stole. And there was a great line, too.
Literally.
There's a great line too that Magneto had. Again, another Magneto line. Let me find it. I definitely wrote it down on paper. Hang on a second. Magneto says to Rogue, loving you makes broken men whole, so that even as you deny us, our heartache is not in vain. And he says this for himself and for Remy. And I like that a lot, because for someone with her powers and obviously wanting to protect herself and push people away, the fact that she does end up loving someone is so rare, because she doesn't want to let herself do that. So they recognize that in her and see that she's willing to love them. So they feel better. They feel bigger and stronger, and they feel like worthy of someone who's so not easily relinquishing love and emotion. And so they feel positively affected, even if she denies them. I thought that was a brilliant way to put that. I was like, that's fucking, that reminded me of this Jack Nicholson movie called As Good As It Gets, where he says, I found the perfect line. You make me want to be a better man. And I was like, that's, I mean, it still sounds a little narcissistic coming from him in the moment, but making it all about himself. But the fact that what he's trying to say is, her, as fucked up as he is, her presence in his life and her impact on his life, he's never wanted to be better than when he's around her. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on okay. that shit.
I like that. I like that a lot. That's a brilliant point.
Thank you.
But yeah,
there's a lot of talking at you, and I apologize.
No. Because that's, yeah, she's built up these walls so high that, like, once they can come over them, they're like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so worthy. Much bigger than these walls. Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
I did find the Logan line from earlier when she, right before she says, I forget sometimes how many sunrises your eyes have seen. He says, I know all about drowning in memories. Best to look up and keep paddling.
Yeah.
That's where I think you're talking about him sounding like a pirate. Yeah, arg. Where's all the rum gone?
Why is the rum always gone? Yep. That's exactly it.
All right, back to your notes, though. What have you got next?
Oh, God. So, Cable. When Cable shows up.
Ooh.
That was another gut-wrenching moment, because as soon as they recognize each other, he's zipped away again. Mm-hmm. However, whenever he does show up, she says, Cable?
Yeah.
How does she know him?
Yeah, that, I have to say, eludes me as well. I have seen the series, but I think it's probably a later episode that I should watch again. Any episodes where Cable has interacted with them, I'm wondering which one was near the end where it might have been Madeline Pryor that he interacted with, but... she does recognize him. Yeah. And then he, you know, she says, you're okay. And then he says, I'm so sorry, mother. And then he gets pulled away into space or time. Yeah. Yeeted. Not sure what's going on there. I'd love to know more. The amount of time I had to really gather my thoughts and notes on this episode, that is one thing I am lacking on this one. But it also felt like right before she had that vision and then saw Cable. And I think Ryan Airy brings this up as well on, is it Screen Crush?
Mm-hmm.
She seems to have some kind of beam hit her in the head before having this vision and then seeing Cable. So I don't know where that's coming from or if it's going to show it. Or maybe it's just meant to represent the beam of, okay, he's going to be here soon. This is what's about to happen. I don't know how telepathy works visually in this yet, but I don't know. It was right before her nose starts bleeding and she has those visions again. It looks like a pink beam hits her in the face.
Yeah, I was putting some stuff together there for a second, but then I think it all fell apart. But yeah, I could, like, if somebody was like, yeah, it's telekinesis, I'd be like, or not telekinesis,
telepathy. Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, okay. But I was gonna say something about how it affected both Jean and Madeline. Because he's their son, and so mm-hmm. maybe they would get some kind of a warning. Then is he really Jean's son, or is he? But then they're both made up of the same genetic matter, so I don't know if that falls. That's where my brain's going.
Did she faint? Did Jean faint back at the mansion?
She didn't faint, but she does fall over and has the same.
Okay.
She doesn't. I don't think she gets a nosebleed though. So maybe the nosebleed is because
yeah.
that's his mom. But, but no, happy birthday, it's... mom. Nosebleed.
I totally forgot that. Yeah.
But Jean does definitely get the same kind of, like, vision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. And vision.
vision. I wanted to quickly pass over a few characters that we see very briefly in this episode that are not focused on for very long, but they're straight from the comics and it's just cool to see. Obviously, we talked about a couple of them, Leech, Glob Herman, Callisto, leader of the Morlocks we saw earlier, Tommy, another Morlock we saw who has the, like, very multicolored hair, and she says, the X-Men are no friend of the Morlocks, and right before Gambit shows up to save them. She can turn two-dimensional. That's her power, by the way, which is very weird. The Dazzler is a character we see. She turns sound into light and eventually becomes a pop star. She is from the Mojo verse. She was the makeup artist for the original Mojo verse hero Longshot back in the original series. And then she comes to Earth and becomes a pop star. And people have been wanting Taylor Swift specifically to play Dazzler for a very long time. That is like an online petition going on, so the Venn diagram of fans that are X-Men fans and Swifties are wanting that to happen. I don't know if Ryan Reynolds will make it happen or somebody else, but I'm sure it could. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, well, you said Taylor Swift, and I was reminded that we still haven't talked about the Eras Tour.
Okay, well, the next characters that come up, Multiple Man creates like a dance move where he is featured shooting a bunch of himself in a row. There's Exodus, which is a kind of a protege of Magneto in the Genosha, some of the Genosha lines in the stories in the comics. Boom Boom has like 2 seconds maybe on screen, which is a character from like a younger team of X-Men that can create little balls of like. They look like Dragon Balls, and I believe she can just create little bombs all the time. She just constantly makes little explosive bombs, similar to Gambit. Moira McTaggart is shown with her thick Scottish accent instead of the Rose Byrne's version of her in the movies, where she's just an American CIA agent. And Banshee, her husband, is also there with his thick Irish accent and his sonic scream ability. They never hooked up in the movies, which in the comics and in the original series, they are husband and wife. Makes sense that they didn't hook up in
Okay.
the movies because they made Banshee a teenager and Moira was like in her 30s. Would have been weird.
Would have been first class, right? I remember Banshee from first class. Okay.
I loved that actor who played Banshee. He was in Get Out as well. He plays creepy so well, but he was a good Banshee. He just should have been Irish. They're afraid of accents in the MCU, not the MCU, the Fox universe.
This show, however, not afraid of accents at all. We've No pun intended. We've run the gamut from pirate to Irish to Scottish to we've got everything.
Keep paddling, Gene. Yeah, that's the best Logan I could do, I think. My voice is hoarse enough this week I could do it. Gene.
Arg, that's my best Logan.
Narg, Gene.
Then they
Pump
got my leg.
it. It's really more of a guideline, Gene.
Honestly, that's the best yet, I think. That sounds just like him.
That was one of my favorite things when the Pirates of the Caribbean movies came out. I love doing Barbossa impressions where he's like, it's really more of a guideline. I love
That
that. I love that line.
was really good. Oh, okay. I don't want to get into it yet, so I'm just gonna say my last note that I have. The song that is playing is Happy Nation by Ace of Base. And I just had such member berries hearing that song. And once
That was
again, I.
during their kiss fly dance thing.
Yes, yeah. When she was absolutely flaunting it, like, haha, Gambit.
That's tough to do that in front of everybody because it's a political, you find out pretty quickly it's a
Yeah.
political pairing. It's all to make sure
Yes.
that Magneto's demands are met if he's going to join the council. Gross.
Well, and then. Yeah, it is a little gross. But yeah, and she says it after their dance. It's like you couldn't have let Gambit know, like, hey, I'm gonna go out here and do this thing real quick and don't think anything of it. It means nothing.
Well, she didn't know. She didn't know it meant nothing. She was still hitching on the idea that maybe it was true love. Maybe touch mattered more than anything. And then she kisses him in front of
Okay.
everyone and then says, Remy was right. Some things are deeper than skin.
Gotcha. Okay. I think that some things are lost on me with animation sometimes. I think some things are lost on me a lot of the times just because I am who I am.
Well, sound like Popeye a little bit, but I understand.
But
I am who
I
I
guess who I
am.
is.
I am what I am. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
Oh,
If no one's seen the Robin Williams Popeye movie, check that shit out because they are trying to make a new live action Popeye, and I don't think it could live up. Robin Williams is a legend.
I don't think I'm remembering that Popeye movie, and
No one does.
I don't think I knew it was Robin Williams though. There was a time in my life that I didn't realize the same actors were in all of the movies. Like I didn't realize that famous people existed. It
You were
was,
like the character was all you saw first, and you're like, oh shit, wait a minute, what? That was
yeah,
played by Robert
by
De
someone
Niro?
else. Like I would watch like well I didn't actually watch Jumanji because it scared me too much, but like I watched a lot of animated shit. That's probably why. Because I didn't know that Thumbelina and Ariel were voiced by Jodie Benson, two
Oh,
of my
there you
favorite
go.
movies of all time. They're both the same person.
thingamabobs, I got 20.
But who cares? No big deal. I want more. Yeah. But you know, there was I like remember a point in my life where I was like, oh shit. So like the same people are in all the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of
it was
awesome.
Probably middle school.
It's something I'll be honest with you, and I'm not trying to throw a shade. I've always been aware of it. And I didn't have to wait until you took a sip before saying that. I apologize.
I've never been
me.
A dummy.
No, it always fascinated me because a part of me wanted to go into acting. I took a lot of drama courses in my life, and it amazed me some of the people that thrive because they play the same character or same type of character very well. For example, Robert Downey Jr. And he is trying to break from that now because of playing Tony Stark so many times. But after a while, he did get kind of typecast, and you're like, okay, we want that guy because he's so likable and smarmy, and you know, he's a jerk, but he plays it really well. And so he gets kind of known for that, but he's also a chameleon. And to me, the chameleon actors are the ones who are always going to have a job when their personality kind of grows old on people or takes its toll and whatever. It's, you know, passes the bubble of popularity. And then, you know, what do you do? So Robert Downey Jr. is now trying to reinvent himself in his acting. And he had that with Oppenheimer. I think he'll have that going forward. He's going to have a lot better luck. But, you know, he played Tony for so damn long that it was very hard to see anybody but.
He played Tony Stark for so long that in Oppenheimer, he had to play Obadiah Stane.
Oh!
Just saying.
Tony also, Stark acted this role with a box of scraps.
In a cave.
In a cave. Yeah. Good shit.
Also, I think it was probably around third grade that I was like, oh. Like, it was because Leonardo DiCaprio was on Titanic, and I was obsessed with Leonardo DiCaprio, and I was like, Oh, you mean there's other films that I can watch him in? Fuck me up.
I would highly recommend, for those who want to see RDJ in a small but awesome role, there's a movie called The Wonder Boys, where, I shit you not, Hank Pym, Tony Stark, and Peter Parker are all in this movie. And it is about a kind of washed up writer turned literary professor played by Michael Douglas. And he's just trying to write his book, but he's kind of got a version of writer's block. And Tobey Maguire plays his like prodigy student, like this awesome student in his class that he's jealous of because he's got it and he's kind of mad at him. Tobey Maguire is also a compulsive liar in that role, and it's an interesting role. And Robert Downey Jr. has a small part in it. Rip Torn's also in it. It's a goodie though. I'd highly recommend it. Yeah, and it's a comedy drama with a lot of drugs and shenanigans. Yeah. Okay.
You said Peter Parker. I immediately saw.
Tom
Holland. And so and you started describing the movie and I was like, I think I've seen that movie, but I was thinking of a movie that doesn't exist, I guess, in my head.
Fair.
Yep.
So if you want to see a Andrew Garfield movie before he was big, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus is fantastic. And it has Spider-Man. It has Joker. As Jack Sparrow, as young Dumbledore. I'm just going to name actors by their...
By their best-known role.
Yeah, oh, no, God. It's a cool one. Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. Fantastic movie. The last movie that Heath Ledger was in. I've talked about it before, I think, but...
Have you seen the movie? It's I forget the name of it, but it's Harry Potter and the Riddler, and they're stranded on a desert island.
Wait. Oh yeah, Swiss Army Man.
Army Man, yeah.
I love this new trivia game. People should throw those at me more. I like that idea.
That is a fun game. All right. I'm in.
Yeah, Swiss Army Man's dope.
It was a funny movie.
Harry Potter plays a corpse and he farts his way across the ocean. It's so weird. But great. Yeah, my wife and I quote that one all the time because he's trying to explain to Daniel Radcliffe's character what the dress at Park is.
I don't know Harry Potter's character. There we go.
He's trying to explain to him what the movie Jurassic Park is with like little cardboard puppets. Oh man. Anyways, I can't explain that. That's an inside joke for me in my life, but it was a good time.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm sorry. Yeah. I did that today at school. I had a student. I said that we're reading this book, and we had El Chupacabras was in it a couple days ago. And one of my students showed me there's a movie on Netflix, and it's called Chupa. It's a kids movie, PG. Yeah. Watched it last night, cried my eyes out. It was adorable. And it's about this kid who goes to visit his grandpa, and he finds that his grandpa is trying to save a chupacabra. Mm-hmm. In his barn, and they become friends, and oh god, it's adorable. Nice. But the movie to me is like Coco mixed with Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
If those two movies had a baby, and the bad guy is exactly like Richard Grant, but Richard Grant obviously in Jurassic Park is good, and the bad guy was bad, but like there's like scenes.
Alan Grant.
What did I say?
Jurassic Park. Richard Grant. Richard E. Grant is old classic Loki from the Loki series.
Okay.
But
I'm sorry.
Alan Grant, it's okay. I'm trying to protect you from the people who will come at you.
I appreciate it. I truly appreciate it. I don't know where I got Richard Grant from.
It's from Classic Loki. He played Classic Loki in the Lokis.
Okay. I said the right thing though. God, anyway.
You put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
On the wrong syllable.
I'm just kidding. He didn't do that.
No.
Continue, please.
Sorry. Alan Grant is the character, and there's like even like shot for shot like points where like the bad guy looks like Dr. Alan Grant. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to explain that to the kid today, and he just like wasn't getting it, and he like showed me a picture of a dinosaur, and he was like, is this Jurassic Park? And I was like, well, I mean, yeah, technically, but like, and then I showed him like the logo, and then I was like, you know, like, and then the T-Rex eats the guy off the toilet, and he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh that kills. Okay.
So you that haven't seen like Jurassic Park, and you should.
It was universal when we were younger. It was universal that everybody had seen Jurassic Park. So it's so weird to grow up in a time where everybody fucking saw that. And then it's now we're in a time when young people have no fucking clue what it is.
A lot of my kids have seen the newer ones, like The Fallen Kingdom and The Lost World. The first one was good. I forget what it's called. The first one was
Jurassic
good.
Jurassic World. Yeah. And then Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and then Jurassic World Dominatrix. What is
big
it?
Old dinosaur shit.
Yeah, that one. It was just like, member berries are us. My God. It was like, dude, just either get what was great about the originals or don't make these. That's the way I look at it. And stop putting Chris Pratt in. Oh, sorry. I'm all right. Yeah.
Do you also...
A little oversaturated.
Yeah. Do you also hate Mondays?
Why would he? He lost weight to become famous. Yeah. Why would he be a cat that loves lasagna? He has been eating zero body fat meals for the last 10 years, and now he's the cat who loves lasagna? Fuck off. I'm sorry. I love lasagna. I'll be Garfield.
I don't believe it. I don't believe in his voice.
I'll eat it right in front of you. Oh, you meant him. Okay, cool.
Oh, no. If I say I believe you like lasagna, that's rude.
I believe you like lasagna. Look at you.
That's not nice.
To get back to X-Men somehow.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. You go ahead first.
No, we probably should. That was a detour.
It was a good one though.
Oversaturated. That didn't get enough love. That was I enjoyed that.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm surprised I haven't said it yet because I'm surprised I haven't thought of it yet because that is exactly what's happened. Anyways, the big final outcome of the episode, the big final action sequence, so damn cool. Him on the Gambit on the bike, Rogue clearing the way, her in her goddamn gala gown, and him in his white tux beating the shit out of Sentinels and just being so cool, and Magneto sacrificing himself, that was awesome. And then we get the title of the fucking episode when he gets stabbed. Ugh. I'll be honest. I read someone's comment. It wasn't on Discord or anything. I think it was on Facebook. I was scrolling on Facebook for the 2 seconds today that I was able to breathe between customers, and I saw something about the two of them dying in this episode. And don't get me wrong, I don't think they're dead forever. I think the Cable being there is going to make it one of many possible futures that they need to fix. But at least at this moment, they died. And that's what I love about big stakes, high stakes. They might be dead forever. They might. But to kill two main characters like that, they're going to be dead for a bit. But Gambit, in his moment, even though having an idea of what was about to happen, him getting stabbed through the side and then saying, "My name is Gambit, remember it," and then charging the whole Super Sentinel was so fucking brilliant. I was standing, like, after the day I had, I needed this. I was standing and cheering, and my wife was like, okay? That was fucking great. That was so good. And people think that I want more death in the MCU or whatever, but it raises the stakes. It has genuine dramatic impact. It's so much fun when shit like that gets written well. It was nice.
I agree. I have to say, I think he knew that was coming, because the cards are always in Gambit's favor, or whatever line he says before that.
Yeah.
Couldn't he have just touched it, though?
Well, I don't think he expected to get stabbed. He was, I think he was, wasn't he in the moment? What I'm remembering is he saves Rogue from her, you know, immediate getting reaction and maybe getting killed. And then he saves her with the bike. And then he's kind of launched himself.
He's got like a metal rod or something.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got his pole. He's got his stick.
Oh, he has a pole?
Yeah, he's got like a staff that he uses. So he's like his playing cards and his staff are the two things that you'll see him. I know. As soon as I said staff the second time, I saw a grin crawl across your face.
I bit my tongue.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Are you okay?
Well, no, I bit my tongue because I was.
I know.
I didn't. I mean, a staff, that means he's pretty big.
He's playing with his staff and he's saving the day, staff out. But that's what it, he's impaled by this other branch of metal that is hanging off the Sentinel again. I've only seen the episode once, but that's what I'm remembering anyways. This weird branch. But yeah, the fact that it's connected to the thing and he fucking blows it up, that was dope.
I want to give him credit that it was clever and that he did it on purpose. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Gambit don't do much on purpose. I don't know that I can give him.
Yeah, he's one of those people who like flies by the seat of his pants very often, but things often work out for him. So it's like, it seems like he always knows what he's doing. But it's just, I think the fact that his power happens to be charging things that touch him with kinetic energy, it's like, that's the last ditch effort I could have. You've killed me. Okay, sure. But guess what? You're also done. Which is dope.
If I'm going out, I'm taking you with me.
Exactly. You tri-head Sentinel, you Godzilla motherfucker.
Definitely gave Squid Game vibes. Omega threat detected, and then the head would turn around, like the girl in Red Light, Green Light.
Red Light, Green Light. Yep.
Yep.
Hell yes. I agree. And then we get that heart-wrenching ending. Oh, I had to explain it to my wife, but she says, "I can't feel you." When she's holding Gambit in her arms at the end, Rogue, she can't feel him, and they do reiterate it earlier in the episode. They say that she can feel. I think Magneto's describing to her like, "Oh, it's the perfect plan. You and I will be the perfect couple to lead this land. Like, you can feel the heartache people are going through simply by touching them." And it's like, if she's not feeling him, there's nothing to feel. He's dead.
Yeah.
Which is so sad. I love the shit out of that, and I understood what they meant by like a higher, like, you know, more mature rating or whatever, because it does it's some dark stuff to think about.
Well, and they show some dead and or dying mutants in this episode. Yeah. It was kind of like, that's not kid stuff. Mm-hmm. When she says that I can't feel you line, I was immediately brought back to Storm. when Storm says, yeah. I can't feel the wind. I can't feel the moisture.
Yeah. Something that she's just been so easily and like automatically connected to. And now it's gone.
Yeah.
Like it'd be like losing your sight or losing your touch or losing your sense of smell. Like it'd just be suddenly this thing you lived with all your life is suddenly gone. And all she wishes she could do, she's tried to avoid touching Gambit for forever. And I think there are a few instances in the comics and then in the original series where she was able to for a short time. Maybe she didn't have her powers or whatever. They kissed, I think, in one episode because she didn't have her powers. But all she wants to do is feel him, feel some version of him. Yeah. And it's...
I am not mature enough for this.
His staff was out and she just wanted to feel him.
She just wanted to feel him. But he was hard in another way. Rigor mortis joke.
Damn! TVMA or whatever you guys have down there.
I think we have that.
Okay, cool.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not really TVX. No, that's porn.
That sounds like porn. Yeah. X-Men.
That's what they should have rated it. X for X-Men.
X for X-Men. Yeah.
All right. I have a stupid comment.
Okay.
I have a comment. I have a question that I think I answered myself. And okay. I have a stupid realization that I had well after the episode ended.
Okay. I'm excited for all 10 of those.
All right. So my stupid all 10. There's only 4.
Oh, okay. You even showed me the fingers and I thought there was more. All right. Go ahead. What's number one? What's stupid like comment?
All right. So my stupid comment is whenever the Sentinel says terminate mutants, the only thing I could think of was Doctor Who, which I know you haven't. Wait, have you watched it?
The Darlaks or whatever they're called. The Daleks. Snarlax. Yeah, the Daleks.
The Snorlax.
Snorlaxes were there. Yeah, I've been to a Comic-Con. Those guys are everywhere. Okay. It is frustrating.
Amanda. Shout I love out Amanda. To you. Because Amanda is I feel like my Doctor Who, like, nerd in the Discord. And we do have a picture together with a Dalek at the Knoxville Comic Con. So just a shout out.
If anyone was to get me into the Doctor Who's, like, fandom, it might be a Mandalorian.
That's hurtful.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I've never watched Love is Blind. Because I have you to tell me about what happens.
That's true. That's very true. Hey, which, by the way, I watched the finale of Josh Must Win last night, and I will tell you the results, so you don't have to watch that either.
Okay. Did Josh win?
I'm not going to tell you that. I'm not going to spoil it.
Oh, you're not going to tell? Oh, okay.
No, I'll tell you. I'm not going to spoil that show when we're already spoiling X-Men 87. Okay. But yeah, anyway, shout out to you, Amanda, I hope that you also had the same thought I did, which was exterminate. That's all I heard. Okay, stupid comment out of the way.
I just wish that the Comic Cons that those guys would clean up like a Roomba as they're going, because that would save everybody a long time, a lot of time.
That would be amazing.
Exterminate rubbish. Clean up dust.
You could probably make a lot of money as a Comic Con cleanup crew. And all of your people all just dressed as Daleks and ran around in Roomba Dalek costumes.
Hell yeah. But see, that's the thing too, is like, as soon as you do that, that guy who's making money off of that idea, they'd ask him, they'd like see him like scheduling the next cleanup, the next room or whatever. They'd be like, oh yeah, what season of Doctor Who have you seen? And he's like, what? And then it'd be shut down immediately. They'd be like, inauthentic.
Poser. Exterminate. Exterminate.
Boot him out. Yeah.
All right. My just plain comment. The proportions are still off on the Sentinels. I have no idea how big these fuckers are.
They're big this time. They're really big.
There was one that was really, really big, but then there was also, I think, one that was like, I don't know, shooting loads of other ones, like tiny little sperm Sentinels. But then they were next to like normal sized humans, and they looked like they were a little bit bigger than normal sized human, or not human, mutants.
They're like, you got to think of Sentinels, maybe not exactly like Russian nesting dolls, but they're all big, and there's just smaller ones that come out of bigger ones, and they come down and they fuck you up.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Even the smallest one is still probably like the size of Dwayne Johnson.
Okay, Dwayne Johnson. I was going to say a two-story building, about the same, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what the movie Skyscraper is about. I think it's him versus a...
It's the two-story building versus the 67-story building.
Let's bring it on. Do
Why
it,
did
bro.
Why I say 69?
Because it's your you, and that was on your brain.
You know, I didn't say 69. I should have said 69.
You didn't? Oh, okay.
I said 67. I should have said 69. And
come on. Well, you were thinking of 97 because of X-Men 97, which is the topic we're here to discuss.
Yes. And we're staying
and
on
that. And 9. What is 9 if not an upturned 6?
Oh. I see your logic. All right. If you can see my logic with planes, trains, and airplanes, then I can see your logic with whatever that was. I see it. I'm here for you, Keith. I support you. All right. Why? Here's my question that I think I might have answered.
Okay.
Why are there Morlocks on an all-mutant planet? I thought that Morlocks were Morlocks because they are driven underground because they can't, quote-unquote, pass for, quote-unquote, and I hate this word, normal.
Well, what do you mean, why are there Morlocks?
I thought that Morlocks were mutants who couldn't pass for human.
Well, so they get the nickname... In regular society in like Westchester or whatever, or New York, they get the nickname the Morlocks there because they can't pass and they build an underground society. Once they get that nickname, and once Magneto transports them safely, he feels responsible for them because they wouldn't be there without his decision to bring them there. So he still continues the nickname Morlocks beyond that. And it just happens to be that that's where they're mostly located. Yeah, at the time of the attack, it's just they know where certain people are.
Or he, like, plopped them down. The...
Yeah. He, like, okay, you guys can hang out in this building or whatever. Like, whatever it is that they're in the gardens or something. Like, that's the place he's given them to live in Genosha. Yeah.
Okay. I think I kind of not really figured that out, but, like, it did seem like they were... ducks in a row. Like, they were a very easy target. They were out in the open, just, like, ready, right for the pick-in, you know?
Well, they're the newest ones there. Maybe they don't know about the evacuation process or, like, where to follow, you know? Maybe they... I don't know. I'm pulling at straws here.
They hadn't done any emergency drills yet.
Yeah, they hadn't done a single drill. Yeah.
You need at least one under your belt to not
get to not stay put. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Here's my last thing that is a stupid thing that I didn't realize until well after the episode ended.
Okay.
And I don't know why. I thought Rogue was holding on to Magneto at the very end.
Oh.
And then after I gave it some thought, I was like, you big fucking idiot. Like, why would you think that? But I think because she said, I can't feel you, I thought she meant she couldn't feel, like, that, like, magnetic
electrical
spark thingy. And, like, it showed her, like, touching and not showing that in the animation style. And so, but yeah, I definitely, that wasn't my first thought wasn't.
That was Gambit.
Yeah.
I thought, because, and I couldn't tell you what, like, visual cues. I think it might have been his chin that we see in the, and it's got, like, little whatever Gambit stubble on it, whatever. But I don't really remember it visually. I just thought story-wise, she's kind of chosen that it's Gambit over Magneto. She's had her kiss with him at the big gala, and she's over him kind of thing. She's shit. I'm not gonna cry over you as much as I would. And she does cry. She's very upset when Magneto gets killed, when Magneto sacrifices himself. You know, even Gambit's like, he's trying to protect us, Sherry. And she's not able to go and save him. So there's obviously feelings for him still to this day, but not the same kind of love feelings that she has for Gambit, at least. Yeah, and to see them both die, she loses both of them. Like you said earlier, it's like the trope is to lose one to make the decision easier. Oh, shit, she lost both. I'm very interested what happens next for her, because it's going to be brutal. Yeah, because she could do some fucking harm, is what I'm thinking.
Bring it, girl. Do it. Let's do it. While you were saying that, talking about the visuals, I think I do have a visual. And part of my thought process was like, damn, Magneto's body is fucking burned, man. Because, like, you didn't see his hair.
Yeah.
And I do think that's just an idiotic thought on my behalf. Like, I was like, they're trying to show him as mangled as possible.
And I got to look at it again.
It was
now.
Just a different body. It was a different body
it
altogether.
Was just a different dude. Different dude. Super tan.
Yeah.
Super, yep. A lot younger.
Well, he would be. He would be very tan if he was in a fire like that. True. Kaboom. True. Very charred.
Very true. I didn't think of that.
Okay. Well. Yep, those are my thoughts. Keith, do you have any other thoughts that you need to get to before we call this are we calling this an episode?
I think we're calling this an episode. I think we should call this an episode. Because it's like it's all the other episodes and we're gonna release it as an episode. That's a good idea. We should call it that.
We should. Okay. But is there anything that we didn't hit on that you wanted to hit?
I love the line, "Luckily you guys could spare a gene." Madeline Pryor said that. I thought it was pretty sassy. Enjoyed Funny. That. Beyond that, no, we talked about it all the notes that I had. This episode was fucking fire. It was great to see. It's one of those things where I could feel the buildup of what they were leading to with a Rogue Gambit centric thing. I didn't expect it to be this dramatic. I didn't expect it to be this high stakes, and I didn't expect it to be this soon. So now I have no fucking clue what the rest of the season's going to be. We got 5 episodes left, and I'm just really glad that they're not making us wait for much, which is just impressive to me because I don't know where they're going to go. They set up other things. Yeah, there's definitely going to be a lot more Logan. There's definitely going to be a lot more Jean and Scott drama, but I don't know what form it's going to take. I expect it to be pretty dramatic as well. But I wasn't expecting to see the people. They're just the pace of this season is really smart. And I was just really happy by the end of this one.
Yeah, I'll completely agree because I like to fast forward my shit and it feels like they already hit the button on this. And I'm totally cool with it. Like,
you know what I want to see a little bit more of?
What?
Beast.
I do really like Beast.
He's being used for comedic relief right now, and I enjoy that just a little bit. He blushes in this episode. It's very cute. When I think Jean and Cyclops are having their biggest argument in the episode, she walks out and says, "You want to be with my clone? Go to Genosha and be with my clone." And she walks past Beast while he's being interviewed in front of the journalist, and he's like, "Oh dear." And that's it. Beast is. I want to see more of him, but it's not a complaint. I just figure they're going to do it soon. Yeah.
I do. I hope to see more Beast. He is a very, I feel like, iconic. Like, he's, spoiler alert for any recent movies that have come out post-credits. He's a very iconic part, I feel like, of the X-Men franchise. And you see him and you know.
Yeah.
Very quickly. So, yeah, seeing him getting justice in this.
Part of the OG5.
Yeah, but like getting his dues. Like, he's he's just as important as freaking overgrown Batman is the only thing I can think. Boy Scout.
Oh, okay. I was like, Batman, are you? Because, I mean, Wolverine's mask kind of looks like a little bit like Batman, but
no. It's like, oh, overgrown Boy Scout and Pirate Logan and
guidelines.
Yeah, I know. This episode was a banger. It was a banger. The beginning, like I said, was a little bit slow. I have got to, catch on to the back end of your thought that Cable is around and showed up in this episode. And so I've got to, like, latch onto that and say that's not the last we're going to see of him. And he's somehow going to be connected in the next few episodes.
Yeah, I mean, when to me, it's like being a big fan of time travel stuff, time travel sci-fi. When you see a character that is known for his whole thing is similar to Bishop. They both are time traveling heroes that they're usually involved in something when there needs to be a different outcome, and they're maybe trying to prevent it. So, I think that's likely what we're experiencing here. Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Yeah. because Emmy want to see Gambit again.
Yeah, and Magneto. Honestly, I've liked Magneto more in this than he's gotten some banger lines. Bangers and mash, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bangers and mash. All facts, no printer. All right. Well, anything else you want to say before we start to wrap this
That's
up?
It. Wrap it. Gambit staff. Never can be too careful, Sherry.
You've got a really good Gambit. I like your Gambit a lot. That's perfected right there.
Thank you.
All right. So if you guys liked this episode, which why would you not? Because it was amazing. You guys can find us on all the socials at Avengers Podcast. That's Abingers Podcast. Avengers all one word. On Instagram and Twitter and X. And nope, those are the same. Twitter and I don't use the other one, and Threads is what I was trying to say, but I don't know that we post on Threads right now because I don't know that we have access to Threads. But anyway, you can find us at youtube.com/Avengers Podcast, where you can see a beautiful visual version of this show, which is wonderful and created by Keith every week. He uploads it and just amazing work. We've got a beautiful pink background right now that showcases Gambit, A.A. Clinton.
Yeah, I wanted to say that too before we left too. This is I drew this of Clinton last year, yeah. And in preparation for this show coming out, because I knew it was eventually going to come out, and I know Clinton's favorite character is Gambit. Shout out to you, Clinton. I love you, buddy. And I was very happy that this was a Gambit-centric episode to be able to feature that art.
We got to showcase another drawing of us, so... We appreciate you, Keith, and yeah, definitely head over to youtube.com/Avengers Patron or Avengers Podcast. Sorry, getting ahead of myself. Good Lord. and smash that like button, smash that alert button so that you get alerts whenever whenever Keith puts out a new video. we also have a Patreon. If you are tired of supporting us freely, you can give us $1 every month, and that goes to getting us, you know, lights, internet that sometimes works, you know, stuff like that. Possibly other stuff in the future, we'll see. but you will get, that's what I meant to say, you will get, there's a whole bunch of bonus content. You'll get an extended version of the show. You'll get a shout out once we get our shit together. We'll see that is. And you get access to our beautiful, wonderful community, a couple of which members got shout outs on today's show because they're wonderful to talk to and they're just fun to bounce ideas off of. And so, yeah, if you are wanting to support the show that way, if you want a free way to support the show, you can give us a 5-star rating on a podcast platform of your choosing. That's goes a long way to get eyes and ears on our show. And good God, I did try to write this down before this episode and got about half, like just barely halfway. Well, no, I say halfway. I mean, I wrote down the intro and that's it. And so that whole last bit was straight out of my butt. So you're welcome for that. Again, 5-star.
You did great.
5-star rating on your podcast platform of choice, please.
And be sure to sound off in the comments about what comes straight out of your butt.
Except for the obvious.
Interaction. Yeah. Don't tell us the thing we all do. Come on.
All right. Well, with that, Keith.
Do you have a credits name?
Do you have a credits name?
I don't. I forgot which one of us was going to do that this week.
Well, you didn't do it last week, so I think it was still your turn.
It should be. Fuck.
That's okay. I did it again.
Oh, you did. Oh, thank God.
All right. And I wrote it down as ass editor. So I'm assuming that means assistant editor.
I hope this is.
I don't know. Every once in a while, you want your ass to look good. You need an ass editor.
True, but how many have we seen in this? I mean, they've completely taken away Rogues, according to all of the internet. So what ass are we really? I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was just gonna say, is that really a discourse? Wait, is that really a discourse?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. The big joke being like, oh, Rogue's butt is gone. That's been going on since the first trailer of this series. It's so stupid. It's so stupid.
Oh, my God.
She had like a bubble butt in the original. I don't even think it was from the original series. I think someone made a meme where they drew their own fan art and then acted like it was part of, I don't know. I don't want to do the research to find that out either. I have no interest.
All right. I won't make you. It's okay, Keith. You're in a safe space.
But they're like, she's got a flat butt now. I don't want to watch. It's like, get over yourself. Calm
down. Gosh. Okay.
You're missing out, dickhead.
Yeah. Agreed, yeah. Dickhead. But anyway, so our assistant editor, I won't give her credit for asses or the lack thereof or whatever. This is a stupid one because it just sounds like this is the richest person I know. And cool. Her name is Geneva Burkhart. Hello, I'm Geneva Burkhart. I'm the assistant editor on X-Men 97. Yeah, sorry.
You always had that tiara ready to play whatever characters like Geneva
Burkhart
or others.
I don't clean. I still have these glasses here from
six.
I don't know how many
ago.
Episodes ago.
Your desk is like a lost and found of episodes. You're not sure what this came into play for.
Yep. Here's a postcard. Here's a postcard of a hot dog.
All right, there you go. Is that to me looks like a scratch and sniff postcard? Does that smell like a hot dog?
No.
For the record, she smelled her postcard.
I did. Yep. I don't.
That wasn't even a gotcha. That wasn't even a gotcha. I used to work at a toy store where we had scratch and sniff greeting cards, and one of them was hot dog scented. And it just smelled like onions. I don't think they know how to capture the smell of a hot dog. It was stupid. We were like, no one's going to buy this. They'll buy the ice cream one. They'll buy the popsicle one. They're not going to buy the fucking hot dog. Yeah. And that.
How does one capture the smell? How does one capture the smell?
I don't know.
Of pure joy.
I don't know, but I also love hot dogs. So it's a great question. I don't know why they think it's so easy. They're like, there's no scientists working on these scratch and sniff cards either. That's the problem. They really got to get a chemist on it.
Or a mutant.
Oh, ah! That'll be my mutant power. To know and replicate odors. My nickname, Scratch and Sniff.
Ended there. That's perfect. Great job, Scratch and Sniff.